Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So this evening, as most of us have noticed, it's rather cold outside, just a few degrees above freezing. So I suspect most of us are probably going to want to kind of stay inside most of the evening and meditate. So I thought I'd might be a little bit longer of a Dhamma talk than normal. And I'm going to start off with it being a guided meditation. And in the guided meditation itself will actually be instructions and in part, you know, it's a way of looking at, or you can interpret it into your own meditation practice as well. And then after the guided meditation, I'll probably give a Dhamma talk as well. So if you're sitting in a typical kind of puppy up on the side, if you want to sit in normal meditation posture, you can go ahead and do that. For the talk. I thought of doing this just about 2.5 weeks ago, almost 3 weeks ago, and gave a Dhamma talk. And at the time I kind of mentioned it was about 5 weeks away before the winter retreat starts. And for myself, I was just contemplating setting the mind now in terms of getting ready for the retreat. And you know, thinking about if there was an object or some sort of subject we were going to pick up as an individual to contemplate for the winter retreat. And you know, just sort of pointing out that was the time to start turning the mind in that direction. So it's like the winter retreat doesn't get here and we're still really caught up in worldly activities. And at the time I used the kind of the Metta Sutta, this thinking of kind of talking about it in ways of giving some examples of, you know, how to pick up some sort of just a subject and being able to work with that. And I went through the first quarter of the sutta. And at the time I was saying, it just maybe have a little bit of interest in using that as my meditation object for the winter retreat. But since then I have been listening to some Dhamma talks on the subject or doing reading, having conversations with various people about that meditation practice. And I see that just in that, in having done that, there's a chanda, this real desire, kind of a real interest in metta meditation. And I'm sort of looking at it in terms of the four iddhipadas. All those sort of factors are coming together with that meditation object. So there's the real interest is there. And I can see that having brought that subject up for the last 3 weeks, that the mind is inclining in that direction, is finding it, we'll say, fascinating. And so because of that, there's energy there. So it's like every afternoon when I've gotten back to my cabin, just doing some study and investigation on that, doing a little bit of meditation, you know, developing that. Then there's the... So that's the second factor of the iddhipadas, the energy, the virya. So there's the virya just naturally arises from that, the chanda, when there's the desire and the interest, and energy will arise for that, whatever the subject is that we have that interest for. And then the third iddhipada is chitta, or mind. And so in this case, it's just sort of like just picking up an object and studying that, thinking about that particular subject. And then the final is vibhansa, which is sometimes kind of translated as wisdom, but it's more of a, not the transcendent, like panya, wisdom of transcendent wisdom, but it's more of a kind of evaluation, sort of picking something up and like comparing things that it's more of at a worldly level, sort of using investigation more at a worldly level. And so in my mind, I've been kind of comparing what I've been reading recently with my training in loving kindness meditation from almost 20 years ago. It was like when I first started it, and as I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, that was my main meditation object for many years, and kind of got burnt out on it or lost interest in it. And it was probably because I was holding it wrongly. I was doing the meditation not correctly, doing it as how I would thought I was being taught from the people that I was studying from, but just being new to meditation and not having say much experience with that meditation or any type of meditation really, maybe wasn't using it right. It definitely had good results and good benefits to a certain extent that that kept that interest there. But I've set it down, and now many years have passed since I've really used it as a meditation object. And so this last couple of weeks since I've been reading and investigating, I can see that my mind is sort of filtering it through the 15 years of training that I've had here at the monastery, and thinking, oh, that's seeing it differently, completely differently. And so there's this real chanda, there's this real excitement, actually, kind of about picking it up. And it's to me, I can see it right now. There's not this sort of sense of, oh, now I know what it's about. Sort of, okay, now I can do it right. But it's and just seeing it from a different angle and being able to pick that up and kind of excited to see where it will go if you're actually putting it into practice. So to start, the loving-kindness, metta, goodwill practice, classically it's stated to start with yourself. If you, for whatever reason, do have a low self-image or even self-hatred, and that's not possible, then just to find any object or some subject that you find it easy to wish well, wish somebody well. Even, remember my first teachers were saying, even a stuffed animal or a puppy dog or something like that, something that it's easy to get that feeling of wishing well. So when I start the guided meditation on loving kindness, I will be talking about it in terms of sending it to yourself. But if that doesn't work for you, then just find something that does. But I will be referring to it in terms of to ourselves. So when starting this practice, it's good to just, like, if we're going to determine, say, 45-minute meditation, and just for the first 10 minutes to determine for that first 10 minutes that we'll just do what's called like equanimity practice, a practice of just going to the breath and quieting the mind, trying to come to bringing some peace and stability into our minds. So when you first start out, just to sit, and I just like to start off taking a couple of really deep inhalations and exhalations, just filling the body, brings a little bit of energy into the body. And that exhalation, you can just feel a release, a little by breathing in strongly and out strongly. You can just sense that, bringing in energy and then just releasing. Just do that for just a few minutes, a few seconds actually, just a couple of breaths. Then, like immediately, I turn to my thinking mind with what's going on in my mind. Usually, at the very beginning of a meditation, there'll be been doing something, have either been in an interaction with somebody, will have been trying to accomplish a task, you know, doing some sort of chore here at the monastery, or doing upatakking duties, or planning something that has to happen right after the meditation, like leaving on a trip or something. So oftentimes the mind will be agitated and very busy. And so just turning our attention to that, and just noticing what's there. And then almost immediately when you sort of sense that, just take your attention into your body and just see how you're not so much worried about the content of the mind, but more interested in the content of our body and our feeling. And just notice if you have been tense, been thinking about something, and you know, before we sat down to meditate, you maybe not hadn't even been aware that that was happening. You know, that was just the normal. So then you sit down and you notice where the mind is running, where it's spinning. And then when you pay attention to the body, you might actually be surprised at, wow, how much holding or resistance or uncomfortableness there was in the body. And we don't need to do anything to change it. Oftentimes, just seeing that will be unpleasant, and there can just be this letting go naturally, completely on its own. And pay attention to that. Really pay close attention to that first initial minute of meditation, just how you had been, and just by that simple act of awareness, how noticing the inhalation and exhalation, how just the body quieted. And we can learn from that. Then as I you've mentioned, starting off with a determination for 10 minutes to be with the inhalation and the exhalation. But we don't need to think about it in terms of 10 minutes or 45 minutes or whatever. It's just one inhalation. One inhalation, one exhalation. That's all we need to think about. And just for that length of that one inhalation and that one exhalation, there doesn't have to be any thinking, doesn't have to be any planning, any worrying. Just giving yourself the energy and the strength just to be with that, just the one inhalation. We don't need to, because it's only one inhalation, we don't need to force it. It's quite easy just to be with just an exhalation, just sort of a letting go. That's fun. Just an inhalation, just sort of just thinking of it as giving yourself a gift of giving myself some energy. Just don't need to worry about it or think about it. Just one inhalation. And just let it go. Kind of enjoy that sense of relaxation and letting go. It's quite pleasant right now. There's almost no distractions. oftentimes when we're sitting here in the evening, there might be the neighbor's dogs barking or sounds of cars coming up and down Tomkai Road. It's quite pleasant right now, but if something does come up in our minds, in our hearing, you know, noticing somebody's rustling of their sound of their clothes or somebody coughing, or if the mind sort of turns to aversion towards that, notice that. Because we've set our intentions for this 10 minutes to just be aware of the breathing, the inhalation and the exhalation. But as soon as the mind turns towards a distraction, that has actually become our meditation object. And that's not necessarily bad, but that's not what we had intended to do. So as soon as you can notice that, you can just label it, even just sort of just notice thinking, or anxious, or whatever the distraction was, just note it several times until the mind sees it clearly. And then just go back to that sense of just one inhalation and just the quietness and peacefulness of that. And again, sort of noticing even how much more peaceful it was just to be with the inhalation than it was to be with that annoying thought. And so every time the mind, not even wanders off, but every time the mind just switches to a different object, we're training the mind to come back just to the breathing, just to that sense of quiet and peace. And in that we're developing a strength. That peacefulness, it's like guarding something that's precious. And valuing that emptiness. And just thinking of it as one inhalation, one exhalation. So we've already been meditating just on our breath now for 10 minutes. That was our intention. So now I'll actually turn towards the meditation on goodwill, on metta. And so when we start this meditation, we're building on what we've just done. That first part is actually very, very critical, very helpful. And we turn towards the metta. Even in the Metta Sutta, it's talking about it in terms of, in general, it says, you know, wishing in gladness and in safety. And it says, you know, may all beings, but we're going to just starting off with just to ourselves, so wishing and gladness and safety. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I live with ease of well-being. And this meditation is, if you need an object to stay with the loving kindness, then it's the phrases that actually allow us to, that's sort of our container, our aid in staying with our meditation object. Like when we do breath meditation, some people use the word Buddha, just using a mantra to help you stay with your meditation object. So with loving kindness, we use just the phrases, whatever phrases work for you. You know, some people say, you know, may I be free from suffering. May I live with happiness and joy. And the phrases I use are, may I be safe. May I be happy. May I live with ease of well-being. Now, in the process of really wishing that for ourselves, really having that strong intention to just, why wouldn't we wish for ourselves to be happy? We may not be, but we do, all of us have at some level that wish to be happy. We're constantly, throughout the day, doing various activities to try to make that come about. So just really making that conscious, you know, may I be happy. And in doing it in a skillful, you know, wholesome way, when you pay attention to it, there is a corresponding physical feeling that actually is in, you know, arises in the body. It's, people will experience it differently. Some people feel it as a warm, very soft, maybe kind of vibration sort of feeling in the chest. For other people, it's more of a cool, very pleasant, sort of cool sensation. It can be different for you. So just as you're wishing yourself happiness, may I be safe, just notice if there's any, you know, say positive, wholesome feelings that are arising. It's probably could be if it's a very subtle, very tender, gentle sort of feeling. We don't need to force, we don't need to, you know, say, have a mental creation. Don't need to create anything. Just allow it to be there. You can, it might even take a long time of sort of doing this practice of wishing that before you really feel a feeling come on. And so it's at that point, it's just, you know, it's a mindfulness practice of doing the phrases, developing a concentration and strength that way. But if you're able to feel some sort of that sense of warmth or this gentle, caring sort of feeling, you say the first thing to do, just with just once or twice, and do it with, in just the length of time it takes to do, just one inhalation and one exhalation. What you can do is, if you have a sense of what that loving kindness, what that feels like for you, to bring that sort of feeling to the top of your head, and just with one cycle of breathing, just permeate your whole body with that, starting at the top of the head, and just as you're breathing, just sweep down through your body, and down into your face, and into your chest, and down into the hips, and knees, and the legs. And just once or twice, just sort of sweep that feeling completely through your body, and just let it sort of permeate your entire body, that sort of sense of well-being. I kind of get an image of it as like as being in a sphere, completely surrounded by this energy, sort of expanding it from this little small vibration, and maybe in the chest area to just as big as, you know, just the immediate area completely around my body, and just sitting in that feeling of metta. And you can continue the phrases, you know, the whole time. You know, may I be safe. May I be happy. May I live with ease of well-being. Now, this feeling of loving kindness, I imagine it as also as like having a bowl that I'm holding in front of me, yeah. And it's completely filled to the brim. Like oftentimes the Buddha will use the image of when we need to talk about like being really mindful, like having a pot or a bowl full of oil. We don't want to spill any of it. So you can imagine we've got this bowl we're holding physically right in front of our heart, and it's full of metta. And we don't want to spill it. We don't want to sort of waste it. So the meditation is to, instead of paying attention to the breath or paying attention to the emptiness, the not sort of thinking that we were doing in the first part of the meditation, is we're switching our attention to that feeling that we've just started paying attention to, this feeling of, may I be safe. It's a very precious feeling, something that we probably value. And it's interesting. And so since it's something that we do appreciate and we value, it is there all the time. Potentially it's always there. Learning to bring our attention to that. And just with each inhalation, each exhalation, we actually don't need to really be thinking about it too much, but just really noticing it, feeling it. And even using the phrases while we're doing this as well, it's learning to use those phrases very softly. Speaking to ourselves in a gentle way. If your mind is tired or your body's tired, you might need to say the phrases a little bit quicker to yourself, or vary the phrases just to keep the mind interested and keep that feeling going. But if the mind is fairly strong, you're able to concentrate, you might stretch the phrasing out a little bit longer. Maybe only say a phrase every two or three breaths, or maybe every five breaths. Just experiment to see what works. But the main thing is, it's the phrases themselves are not really that important. It's the feeling. And as we bring our attention to that feeling, in this meditation, if a thought does interrupt, some distraction, again, as soon as the mind is distracted, that has become our meditation object. And so we, again, notice that. And we realize that wasn't what we had intended to do. So then just note it again several times. Thinking. And then go back to the phrases. And again, paying attention to the physical sensation. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I live with ease of well-being. I'm going to say continue to talk about loving kindness, but just for yourself, just keep that feeling that oftentimes it's talked about as being a nimitta of loving kindness. Just keep that going. And the classical way of talking about this, which is in the Visuddhimagga, they do talk about starting with yourself, being able to be able to feel this feeling, and to be able to develop the mind, to be able to develop the strength to. Well, commentary from other teachers is you want to be able to develop this so you can be with it continually without really any other distractions, without any the mind wandering off into other thinking of planning or getting distracted. To be able to do that for at least 10 minutes. And be able to solidly be with it for 10 minutes. This is sort of a sign, or it's just showing you that your mind is getting strong. And this loving kindness practice is a concentration practice. It's many things, but it is a concentration practice as well. And so as the mind develops this strength, this ability to stay with its object for, say, 10 minutes, you also can develop it so it'll stay for 15 or 20 minutes. But until you've developed it so you can really stay with it for about 10 minutes, they say not to go on to any of the other meditation objects for loving kindness. But once you have been able to do it for 10 minutes, then you would turn the meditation towards a benefactor, someone you see as a teacher. And then I've heard various different classifications. Sometimes it's to a good friend. In the Visuddhimagga, the third stage is a neutral person. And then the fourth stage is someone who we're having difficulties with. And with each one of these new different stages, there are different obstacles that come up. When you're doing yourself and you've developed that real strength and you maybe turn to doing a teacher, things might come up that you didn't expect. Like there might be some attachments towards your teacher. There might be maybe even judgments. You start investigating, using that person as an object of loving kindness, wishing them well. You might start realizing that there's actually parts of their character that you don't like. You start focusing on that person, thinking about them, probably will discover many things that that you like about them that you hadn't really paid attention to. But there will be certain distractions will arise when you switch your object to potential. So there's, with each level, there's something to learn. And it's the real strength of this first loving kindness, the being able to send it to ourselves. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I live with ease and well-being. Just cultivating that awareness and that the strength of mind to stay with it is, in that first stage, is where we're really developing the groundwork for being able to do the other topics, the other subjects. Again, just notice with yourself, are we aware of that feeling, that wish, that intention to be happy? And just as with this wish for ourselves, wishing ourselves to be happy, to be safe, we're not sending that metta to anybody. We're developing it within our hearts. And this really, I really like this image of the holding of a bowl, full of oil in front of us, and just paying attention to caring for that, something precious. Just being very gentle. You have to be very mindful of our movements and what we're thinking. If we're trying to hold something that's valuable, but we put too much effort into it or get tense, we're gonna spill it. And if we don't put enough energy into it, we're gonna just get slouched or sleepy, and we'll spill it as well. The mind will very easily move off into a distraction, maybe into a hindrance. One of the hindrances that's very easy to slip into with loving kindness meditation is this sort of sense of equanimity. So as we're paying attention to this our intention to be happy, and noticing that feeling, if there's not enough energy put into that, the mind will often can just want to go quiet. We just want to be peaceful, like we were doing in the first 5 to 10 minutes. And under normal circumstances, that would be a very wholesome and good thing to do. But here, that's not the meditation object. The meditation object is that the metta nimitta, that feeling of warmth, very subtle vibration. So if you do notice the mind has gone into this, just very peaceful, quiet state, just realize that that's not necessarily unwholesome. It's actually not skillful in this particular meditation. It's not necessarily evil, but we just, again, just like any other distraction, we just note it. Oh, okay, I've gone into the state of very peacefulness, very quiet, but I'm just noticing that, and then again going back to, you might have to generate that feeling again, just going through the phrases and paying attention to what arises. And at first, and maybe for a very long time, the mind will wander off, will be very subtle, even very subtle ways of the mind slipping off and going into, say, just very peaceful mind states or very quiet, or go just the opposite to being bored with this or having aversion towards doing loving kindness. Again, it's just noticing that and finding a way to actually value, really just even reminding yourself that, oh, this is something that actually I do desire, it is something that I want. And just bringing the mind back to that, not forcing it, not making yourself feel a particular way, just even just acknowledging repeatedly throughout the day, throughout the week, as often as you need to, just that this is something that's of value. So it's like for me, just 3 weeks ago, giving the talk and just sort of just even casually mentioning that, loving kindness might be something that I'd like to pick up, but then just these last 3 weeks, it's been coming up more and more into my mind, very consciously been bringing it up, and there's, without me forcing it, there's a real interest. But there was some application of mind, there was an intention, there was the repeatedly bringing it up, but there wasn't a force, there wasn't a, oh, I should be this way, or if only I were that way, then things would be better. It's just allowing that potential to be there, saying this is what I value, this is what I wish to investigate. And just doing that, the causes will come about. Say with doing ourselves, say I was mentioning, we're not sending loving kindness out. We're developing a strength. The mind is, the more we can come back to that feeling, come back to the intention, we're developing a real strength. And the beauty for me with loving kindness is that it's a meditation object that, if held correctly, is very pleasant. And the mind wants to go to it, and in that we're developing concentration, developing a strong mind. And then when we go to the next classification of you know, beings. It's say the benefactor or the neutral person or the difficult person. Again, we're not actually sending loving kindness at this level of the practice. We're just holding that, you still have that same feeling, the same sort of sense of, oh, this is what it feels like to wish myself well. You know, that warm sense, may I be happy. Then we bring in the teacher. So for me, it's Lumpur. You know, just bringing in Lumpur into that same image. So I have the bowl in front of me, this very precious substance of metta. You know, and I just bring Lumpur into my thoughts as well, and just holding the two together, not forcing them to be there. And, you know, thinking of Lumpur and having that thought of loving kindness. And again, noticing it in myself, it's not that I'm sending it to Lumpur, but it's still feeling it completely in my own being, you know, permeating my whole body. And it's learning to keep that feeling going, even with the thought of somebody else. So it's, you know, after we've got that concentration down, and we can do it for ourselves continuously for 10, 15 minutes. Just has its life of its own and energy that takes off, there's a strength developing. And then we bring somebody like Lumpur into our thoughts and just learn to have the two simultaneously there. And they say, you know, for this one, because most of the energy was developed in the first, doing ourselves, about 5 minutes, if you can sort of, you know, hold Lumpur, thoughts of loving kindness continuously for about 5 minutes, then we can go on to a neutral person. And then again, with a neutral person, it's about 5 minutes, and then go on to the difficult person. And of course, the difficult person is the most difficult practice. And there can often be a real hardening of the heart, which is going to be quite shocking and disturbing, because we've been practicing with, you know, ourselves and teacher and neutral people, and, you know, having this sense of openness and care, and then to actually see that the mind closes down or the heart closes down can be sad. And so there's many different techniques to work with that. But it's mainly with all of these meditations, it's a sense of caring and not forcing. So even when we do the difficult person, when we get into that subject, again, because we're not sending at this point, we're still not sending that thought to that person. It's, you know, how to hold that sense of care and loving kindness within our own heart, simultaneously with the thought of something that's difficult. So for these, first four of the subjects that we do the loving kindness towards, it is this. It's really just learning to wish ourselves well, just having that intention, may I be safe, may I be happy, may I live with the ease of well-being. often when I'm doing walking meditation, I'll divide my walking path into quarters and just put a stick or a rock or something at, say, the midpoint, and then the two quarter points. And then when I do loving kindness meditation, I use four phrases. It's, may I be safe, may I be happy, may I be healthy, and may I live with ease and well-being. And part of the meditation for me also is to get that sense of generation, of that feeling going. It's a real investigation of what each of those phrases mean. It is the picking it up, thinking about it. But it's always, it comes back to the physical sensation that arises with that. So, I spent many hours, hundreds of hours, just sort of contemplating, what is happiness? What really would make me happy? It wasn't even what would make me happy, but what would I feel like if I was happy? What would I feel like if I was safe? What would I feel like if I was really living with ease? And then just over many hours of contemplating that, there's a sense you can get a feeling. Just even saying the word, just being, like when I'm doing walking meditation, just to keep it really simple, I'll just break it down to one word and just be safe, happy, healthy, and ease. And as I say, each one of those, they do have a different feeling, different resonance in my heart. And I'll just let that saturate my body as I just say each of those as I'm doing walking meditation. So each sort of time I walk, a quarter of the walking path, and I'll just bring in the next phrase. Congratulations, we've now been doing loving kindness meditation for 35 minutes. So it's good to, when we end the meditation, especially when we're developing it in terms of concentration practice, it's good to actually review what we've done, to bring in this sort of sense of investigation. Did we do anything? Did we learn anything during this meditation? Not that that's what's important. We don't have to have a checklist of things we want to accomplish in our meditation, but it's to review, did we do something that worked, that led to a little bit more concentration, a little deeper understanding? Or did we do something that took us away from that, that came up and I was totally lost for the last half of the meditation. You're just making a mental note of that. And if you do this practice over and over again, then you might notice that there's a catch someplace for us, something that habitually comes in that takes us away. And we'll notice this over time if we investigate, if we take this little bit of time at the end of the meditation to try to learn a little bit about the meditation. And hopefully at the end of the meditation we'll look back at it, and there will be some sort of sense of pay attention to the points where there was happiness, where there was joy or some concentration, some peace came in, and acknowledge that okay, yeah, that did happen. Because the more we acknowledge that, the more we value that, the mind will actually incline to go back to it. I was an art student in in college, and my art professor always told me that like after you've been, I was a painter, so it was like whenever I've been painting, and I'd sort of painted, you know, the length of time that I had intended to be in the studio. You know, I said, you know, sometimes if you're really in a flow, you're feeling really good about what you're doing, the mind is really active in the painting, stuff like that. And he said, sometimes that's the best time to stop. Actually stop, because I've stayed there as long as I had intended to stay. And the reason is that you'll be thinking about that subject until you come back to the studio again. It's like it'll be food, positive food for your mind, and you'll actually be excited about coming back to the studio. So it's the same thing. It's like if we intended to sit for 45 minutes and we did, and you know the mind is happy and peaceful, or maybe if it wasn't, but then we go back and review the meditation, and well, yeah, there was that bit of happiness. So we're ending with a sort of positive thinking about the meditation. Then throughout the day, your mind might sort of pick up, yeah, that was nice, that was peaceful. And your mind will want to come back to it. And the very last thing to do is to share the merit. I think particularly with this meditation, it's good to do that with all meditations, and particularly with this one, since it's really geared towards wishing well, wishing happiness. So, you know, however we do that as individuals, you know, wishing it to dear ones, to people that are close to us, to different classifications, to all beings everywhere. It's really wishing that. So just from our meditation right here, the guided meditation, just any goodness that's arisen from that, you know, may that be a benefit to all beings everywhere. I guess, kind of talking about this particular meditation, I've already kind of filled in a lot of what I was hoping to cover already just in giving the instructions. It's interesting in reading the Visuddhimagga on the four Brahma Viharas, which this loving-kindness metta meditation is the first of the four. So karuna, or compassion, mudita is joy or sort of appreciation of other people's good fortune, and then upeka, which is equanimity. So in the Visuddhimagga, on this section really focuses a lot on the loving kindness section, and they go through some giving some guidelines for it, and one thing it does mention that all the teachers that I've studied with this say is that when you start doing other classifications of beings to you should not be sending or not using as an object, somebody that you would be attracted to, say physically. So you wouldn't use your partner or somebody that you wanted to be a partner with. You just stick with somebody. So like if you're for men, you wouldn't use women typically unless you were gay. And I don't know. Maybe you should do women. I don't know what the situation is there. But so for not to use someone of the opposite sex or somebody that you'd be attracted to. And also they point out that in the text that the person should be alive. And so it makes the meditation more real. It's like it's not that we can't send thoughts of goodwill and wishing well to someone who's passed away or sharing merit to that person. It's not saying we can't do that, but as a subject of meditation, and I think as a concentration practice, that person needs to be there. I think I read somewhere in the commentaries, it's like, it's in the Visuddhimagga that somebody was using their teacher as their benefactor, and they were doing the meditation, and they noticed that they weren't able to generate that feeling, and so they went to another elder and mentioned this to them, and he was trying to figure out why he couldn't get that the metta nimitta to arise, and it turns out his teacher had passed away. So there's some sort of sense that that's in the book why it mentions you shouldn't use someone who's passed away. I kind of think of it too. It's like we really don't know where that person's gone. It's like if we're sending them, wishing them well, it's either just a memory of the person or a speculation about where they might go, and it kind of, to me, it distracts a little bit from the meditations. We're maybe manufacturing or making things, creating things in our mind instead of paying attention to the feeling of loving kindness. So those are the kind of the first couple of things it gets into is like who to be sending it to. I find it interesting that kind of in the first couple of pages it introduces the meditation and talks a little bit about who to be sending it to, and so the first four that I've been discussing here, the first three it kind of covers in like one page. I think it goes like maybe one and a half pages, and it's like almost a page is sort of geared towards sending it to yourself, and then I think it's in one paragraph, and they bring up the benefactor and the neutral person, and even I think it mentions even the friends. So it brings in a couple of other categories, only like one paragraph or two, very short, and kind of gives why you should do this person or why that particular order. It's basically because you're going from something that's easiest to do to get the feeling going, and then just making it a little bit more challenging, a little more effort to do it. And then you get to the classically in the text it's referred to, I kept referring to it as the difficult person, but it's often, sometimes still referred to as the enemy. It's just really difficult person. I didn't count how many pages, but I'm kind of guessing it was about 10 pages of advice on how to work with the difficult person, which I think kind of shows, again, like how difficult that particular meditation is to be able to do it to somebody who we have aversion towards, have thoughts of ill will, and how to be able to counteract those thoughts of judgments, criticism, aversion, ill will. I think we can all relate to that. We probably have somebody in our lives somewhere. Even though the Visuddhimagga does say that if you're doing this meditation and you get to the quote-unquote enemy and nothing arises for you, then don't do that meditation, which I kind of like. It says, if you're one of the lucky people that don't have an enemy, then you don't want to create one in your mind even. So it's just from there, go straight from the neutral person on to the expanding it to all beings everywhere. But I did, I'm not great with lists, so I'm cheating here a little bit tonight, but I wrote out just a real quick summary of in the Visuddhimagga, all the different meditation instructions the Buddha gives on how to deal with trying to be able to send not send, but be able to have loving kindness. I think that's a better way of phrasing it. To have this sense of goodwill towards towards someone that we're maybe having difficulty with. And so the first piece of advice is that when we're doing the loving kindness meditation to ourselves, you know, we get a sense of what that is, and then we go to the more we've gone through different stages, and then when we get to the difficult person, so it's holding that sense of loving kindness, like I say, in the bowl right in front of our heart, and then when we bring the difficult person in, if we just notice the mind closing down, not wanting to do that, then to back up, to go back to a sense of where you can actually feel the loving kindness, so go back to the neutral person. Some of the notes I've been reading right now is, I don't know if he's still teaching, it was Ajahn Maha Chatchai, some notes that were, some monks were writing back and forth and were translating questions and getting some notes back and forth, and Maha Chatchai mentions that like when you're doing these meditations, like if you're only going up to the neutral person, so you should always start the meditation with yourself, or however you get that feeling going, and then go to the benefactor. And if you have it fairly well developed, like you can just sort of sit down and really connect with it, you don't need to do it for 10 minutes. You can just do it to where you get the feeling going, it's really strong, and then you go to the benefactor, so you go to the second meditation, and if it's this feeling's really strong and it's there, just a minute or two, and then go on to the neutral person. And if it's really strong, then you can go on to the difficult person, and then just so you just keep going. But then as soon as you meet that resistance and lose it, then you go back one, and then sort of develop that and get that going, and then go back again to the difficult person. So it's just very gently, very caringly, sort of, looking, going to the more and more difficult meditation. And I believe it was, I think I got this, I have to ask him if I got the story right, but I heard Ajahn Sona telling a story where somebody, a disciple of his, was trying to send metta, or trying to just feel metta. Again, feel metta, towards Pol Pot. And this person was a Cambodian, and it grew up in the killing fields. And they wanted to be able to send loving-kindness, feel loving-kindness towards Pol Pot. And they couldn't do it. Like, as soon as they did it, their heart just completely closed down. And I'm assuming this person had developed it very strongly within themselves and knew what that feeling was. And so Ajahn Sona's advice was to just take it real slow, I think he said even the first year they only had tried the meditation one time, and they just went back to doing themselves and neutral people, or maybe they took other difficult persons, someone not quite as traumatic as that, but just taking someone and then learned how to do that, how to hold that, and it took them 20 years. But after sort of, developing this practice over that length of time, they were able to feel that kindness towards even somebody as difficult as that, and even be able to forgive them. So it's just not for any forcing in this meditation is not helpful. So it's whenever you do meet resistance, then it's acknowledging that and noting that's not the meditation, and then just go back once. That's the first piece of advice. The then so he gives the second contemplation is if you're you say you tried that and that doesn't work, then I would say that one is probably the primary one. You just always keep working on that. But another way of sort of approaching it, these would be the rest of these. And there's actually 12 or 13 different contemplations they give here. So the next one is to go back and contemplate the, he said, the Buddhist teachings on the bandit and the saw, and just sort of just realizing that, you know, if we're bringing somebody into our mind who's difficult, and the simile is the Buddha says that, you know, that if a bandit were to come and grab you and were to take a saw and just cut off all your limbs, one at a time, you take off your arms and your legs, and you know, just to do that, if you were to have a thought of ill will towards that person, you actually would not be practicing loving kindness. So that's a pretty high standard. It's just to bring that into mind, you know. So I think there could be some sort of justification going on in the mind. Like if you think of somebody and there's aversion, you know, the logical mind might come in and say, well, yeah, I'm right. You know, that person is that way. You know, they shouldn't be this way. But then just to contemplate, well, that actually may be true, but this isn't loving kindness. You know, the Buddha really set a high standard for that. And as a similar contemplation, the Buddha once used the analogy of if you were with four other people, and someone who you considered to be your benefactor, someone who was a neutral person, and somebody who was a difficult person, and then somebody were to come into the room and they made you make the decision, and there's some really evil person came in and said, you have to make a choice of the four of you, one of you has to die, and you have to make the decision who that person is that's going to die. And the Buddha said, if you were really cultivated loving kindness and it was perfected in you, that you wouldn't be able to make a decision. You wouldn't, I think logic, or, in the world you might, you could come to the conclusion that for any one of the four people, you could sort of come to a conclusion that, if someone has to die, well, it would be the enemy. You know, it's like they're an evil person, you can justify it, okay, that person should go. Or you could justify it as the neutral person because it's, somebody you don't know anyway. Or, your best friend's like, of course, he'll forgive me. He's a really caring person. They'll forgive me. Or you might think of yourself. It's like, I'm not going to take the life of any other being, but someone has to die. It's going to have to be me. And so you could decide that. But the Buddha said if you were really practicing loving kindness, you wouldn't be able to make a distinction between any of the four, yourself or even the enemy. So that's a good contemplation to bring in. So the third contemplation is the contemplation of, there's seven contemplations here, seven thoughts of what an enemy would wish, what you would wish on an enemy or what an enemy would wish on you. And I'm not going to go through the different seven, but it's kind of like, they would wish that you were ugly or that you would wish that you didn't have fame or fortune or that you wouldn't have wealth or you wouldn't have good health or friends. Just sort of contemplating this, that if you are bringing in the difficult person into your loving kindness meditation, that just that is what you think of an enemy. If you really did have an enemy, those are the, you wouldn't want your enemy to be enjoying themselves. You want to see them suffer. You want to see them in pain if it's a real enemy. And so if you're bringing somebody into your mind and you really can't wish them well, at some level, our minds might be wishing that to somebody. And that's, when you really bring that to consciousness, it's kind of horrifying. No, we don't. We wouldn't, even if it's somebody that we have difficulties with, we really wouldn't wish that on them. Or if we're not actually cultivating the opposite, very subtly we might be wishing those things on people. And that's kind of shameful to think that I'd be wishing that on somebody. And so I would really want to try to figure out how to be able to send them loving kindness. So the fourth one, if those don't work and you're still not able to feel loving kindness towards that person, is to remember some wholesome quality in that person. I mean, everybody has some wholesome qualities. They've done some wholesome action. They've been kind to somebody. They've said something nice to you even. And so, you know, like I say, you might be able to justify why you're angry with somebody or view that person as difficult. But we're selectively choosing to focus on that aspect of that person. And so it's to very consciously move against that to realize, okay, this person does, especially if it's, you know, community members living here, it's like every single person here has wholesome intentions. You know, it should be, you know, very easy to find many, many good qualities about everybody that lives here. And so just consciously, you know, moving away from that, those thoughts of seeing them as difficult, and just really training ourselves to see them as in the beautiful aspects. And I kind of think I've given several talks on, you know, sort of giving forgiveness and asking for forgiveness, and it's like, you know, if we start to develop in our minds, you know, the attitude or the thought of, you know, this person is that way, you know, like this person is a difficult person, subconsciously we will start create the situations and the environment where that person will actually have to act in that particular way when they're around you. It's very subtle, but it's just interesting to contemplate that. Like, if I really believe that you're a bad person, then, you know, like, do I actually create that? Am I the one that's manifesting that? You know, like, if the last one kind of counteracts that, so I won't go into that yet. Then the next, so if you sort of do contemplate someone's good actions and the wholesomeness in them, but you're still not able to send loving kindness to them. I keep saying send if you're not able to feel loving kindness for that person. In the Anguttara Nikaya, is the Book of Five. There's one of the suttas. There is a removal of sort of distractive the removal of resentments. And it goes through sort of doing, start off with, if you have resentments towards somebody, of sending them loving kindness. So obviously that's not working for us, because that's why we're going to the sutta. So then it's to look at compassion, to sort of looking at it in terms of, well, that, you know, I'm suffering, they're suffering in the situation, so it's doing compassion. And if that doesn't work, looking at it with equanimity, just sort of, just allowing it to be there, because as, you know, the Buddha's teachings, everything arises due to causes and passes due to causes, so we can just allow that to be there. It may just change completely on its own without our needing to do anything. So contemplating it and looking at it with equanimity. And if that doesn't help, then it's thinking of it in terms of sort of like, they're the owner of their actions. So, like, if it really is somebody, it's not just you, but, you know, that person really is doing something that's difficult, and is making it difficult to be kind to them, to like them, or something like that. You know, it's just realize that, you know, they're the owners of their actions. They've created that. They're bringing that on themselves, and. That's also equanimity, but just really contemplating it much more in terms of that. And then that's either the fourth one or the fifth one. But the other one is just avoiding the person, which is sometimes that is the best solution. Is to if it's somebody that's just not, you know, creating. It's creating bad mind states in yourself. Just to put some distance. You know, not to necessarily be mean or cruel, or, you know, to you say it's not in the sense of alienating the person, but it's just for yourself. You know, distancing yourself. It's either mentally distancing yourself. You know, don't need to bring up the subject and think about it a lot, or just if you're in the presence of that person, it brings up. Version, we just try to, you know, you obviously in a community you have to be around people, but we don't. We can also choose our time and place, and so that is, it's good to know that that potentially is an option. And so the sixth, so if that doesn't work, then there's a poem in the Visuddhimagga that I'm not gonna read, but there's a sort of a poem, and it sort of talks about just various things of having aversion and how many ways it's actually kind of counterproductive to loving kindness or just to our well-being. So it's like, so why would you want to do that? And so it's kind of a nice, it's a whole page poem that you're supposed to sort of recite or to review. So the seventh one is, so this is the seventh and the eighth, is reviewing karma within ourselves. Again, so that sense of, we are the heirs to our actions. So if we're, wishing to send loving kindness towards somebody, and we're not able to, and if we're feeling aversion, and we're actually cultivating that. Again, it's like we're not able to, don't have the strength yet to be able to, say, forgive, or just the mind states do go into this judging. When we do go into that judging and being critical and thinking in those terms, we're actually reinforcing those mind states. So it's to contemplate that and to remember that it's not so great. It's not leading. It's not going to lead to enlightenment. Having the most focused mind on being critical isn't going to lead to wisdom. So you're just bringing that into mind. And then also, the next part of that is, realizing that, contemplating their karma in the same way. So that was brought up also in the Anguttara Nikaya. So the next contemplation, if those don't work, is to actually contemplate the Buddha's karma. And contemplate that... This is a lot of going into past life, birth stories, and they list, this is the biggest section in the Visuddhimagga, they list 9 different stories of the Buddha in his quest for enlightenment, and goes through all sorts of different permutations of when he was a grown adult, to when he was a child, to when he was a common animal, to when he was a naga, in all these different forms. In all of these different forms, he was, persecuted, tortured, actually. And in all of these stories, he never had a thought of ill will towards the person or people that were torturing him, and even killing him. In these stories, and he didn't bring up a thought of ill will, and so if this is a meditation we're wishing to develop, sort of bringing that up as inspiration. That, okay, this is possible. It's a really touching story. I thought once when he was a naga, he was practicing and developed loving kindness, and was off in his cave, and these village boys. 16 of them sort of came and discovered him, and as village boys could do, they saw this, probably looked like a huge snake to them, and they pulled it out of the cave, and they ran a rope through its neck, and they had spears, and they were torturing the snake and putting thorns and stuff like that in the wounds and stuff like that, and dragging the snake, around and things like this until it died. And he's probably reflecting after he's died that, he's like, this is really powerful naga. He had developed loving kindness to a very extreme degree. And he was like, I could have just with a look of my eyes, I could have vaporized all 16 of those kids. Like, he could have just, defended himself. But he didn't, did not want to harm them. And so I found that just to be a real touching story. But there's like 9 different stories of that. So to contemplate that, you know, that, just as an inspiration that the Buddha had developed this loving kindness to that extent. Then the 10th one is just reviewing the various suttas about the endless samsara, just the endless rounds of birth, you know, that we've gone through. This is samvega, is the sense of bringing up real urgency in the practice, in realizing that just that we do want to. When you start really seeing, you know, how long this the round is, and that you know this one difficult person that we're facing, you know, in the terms of the big picture, it's nothing, you know, it's really minuscule in terms of its importance, and that can, you know, very easily just shift it to like, okay, yeah, it's like, you know, my real goal is we need to get off this round of suffering and get out of the suffering and this petty grievance that I have. You know, it's not worth it. I really need to let go of that. Then there's I won't go through all of these, but the next contemplation is to bring up the advantages of metta. There's the suttas bring up, there's 11, and my favorite one is the cultivating this, that you sleep with ease. So it's a good meditation practice if you want to sleep well, and then you wake well as well, and things like fire and poison and weapons won't harm you. There's some great stories where in the suttas about that, where people were not, you know, people intentionally wanted to harm somebody, and you know, the arrows or weapons just were deflected, just didn't hurt them. So there's 11 different benefits of practicing loving kindness, and you know, the highest ones, or the very last one, I think it is, you know, that if you really develop this loving kindness, that you know, at the end of, you know, when you pass away, that you'll be reborn into the Brahma realm, if not higher. You know, so if you hadn't attained any of the levels of enlightenment, you would get minimum, you'd be reborn into that really high Brahma realm. And so there's 11 different benefits of that. 2 more is to, I like this one, and so if you're, there's an individual that you're having difficulties with and you're not able to feel loving kindness towards that person, is to break that person apart in terms of elements. So like, you know, like you're angry at somebody. It's like, well, am I angry at their hair? Am I angry at their nose? Am I angry at their teeth? You know, just sort of just breaking it down into all these different things. You can kind of see the absurdity of that. You know, just contemplating it in terms of not self, and you know, either is that person isn't a self either. So it's like just really breaking it down and just questioning it in that way can bring a playfulness to it and allow you to let go of it. This is my favorite one though. And so be very cautious this week if I give you a gift, because the final straw is if you still are not able to send loving kindness to feel loving kindness towards an enemy, is to give them a gift. There is something really powerful in that. I actually have done that practice before, and partly it's just you know, you're creating, with generosity, you are creating a bond with somebody. You know, that's one of the, when I was studying the 10 perfections, the baramis, Ajahn Sucitto really made that point really strongly, that, you know, the loving kindness or the generosity, you know, you're creating a bond with somebody else in that whole process. And actually all the baramis, it's like you're developing bonds with each of those different perfections. And this, you know, so if you are having difficulty with somebody, it's like, you know, to give a gift, you know, give a proper gift, give something that's nice, you know, it does take some effort on your part to, you know, think about the other person, you know, what might they like, what might they need, you know, seeing them as, you know, instead of as an enemy, as a friend, you know, like, okay, yeah, how can I help this person? And then you're just thinking about, like, when you receive a gift, you know, like how that makes you feel, you know, just that sense of joy, or, you know, it's fun receiving gifts. And so when you give that to somebody, you know, there is a joy in yourself when you give a gift. If you really pay attention, you do something kind and generous, it's just even, you know, washing somebody's cup, you know, like someone comes into the kitchen and takes their cup, like today after the meal, probably most of the lay people weren't here, but I was watching Tan Titapo come up and take the spittoon and bowl away from Ajahn Sanyamo, and he was still sort of had a handkerchief in his hand, and I was watching Titapo, and he noticed that Ajahn Sanyamo's bowl still was full of water, and usually Ajahn Sanyamo would empty that into his spittoon, and he notices that because he's paid attention. And since Ajahn Sanyamo was doing something, Titapo just reached over and dumped the water out into the spittoon for him. And it brought up a lot of joy in me. You know, I wasn't even receiving the generosity, but it's a very simple act, but it was just really beautiful. And I'm sure Ajahn Sanyamo probably noticed it and felt joy at seeing that, just that attentiveness. And Titapo probably felt really happy about that, you know, just sort of being able to help somebody, just really simple way. Not that Titapo has seen Sanyamo as an enemy, but so it's good to do acts of generosity and give gifts to friends as well, neutral people. But this, you know, act of doing that to somebody you see as an enemy, you know, it changes your perspective, and you're actually creating a positive bond, you know, something to connect with that person in a different way. And that person's going to react to you in a different way. And if that person, you know, sees you, again, it's like that, you know, if you see somebody in a negative way, you probably are subconsciously creating the conditions for that person to be that way. So if you go and do something kind to somebody who's being difficult, and they're being difficult to you, so it's like, you know, they are actually seeing you as the enemy as well. So if you go and you do this kind act, just do something generous to them, they're going to see you in a different light, and they're going to start creating conditions where they're going to see you in a more positive light. So, you know, you're actually, by giving that gift, you're potentially helping them to be a better person, which then, of course, is going to make their life as well as yours a lot easier. So I think it's a very, I think you should start with that as the first one, instead of going through all these other ones. You should start with giving gifts. And so just a little bit more, hang on there, is often the chanting that we do around loving kindness meditation, especially the chant, you know, I will abide, pervading one quarter, you know, the mind imbued with loving kindness, you know, likewise the second, likewise the third, likewise the fourth, so above, is below, all around and everywhere, and to all, is to myself, and I will abide, pervading the all-encompassing world with the mind imbued with loving kindness. So I kept correcting myself by saying, you know, it's like sending loving kindness to the enemy. And it's like, no, it's feeling. So the first stages were actually, in those first four stages, you're only sending the loving kind, you're only feeling the loving kindness towards one other person. So in the first one, it's yourself, the benefactor, the neutral, and even the difficult person. It's usually just one other person. So it's not expanded. It's still, you know, contracted. And the reason is that in terms of concentration practices, is you are building. You actually are developing this in your the strength of what you've learned on the previous meditation. It's cumulative. So you're developing this storehouse, this real wealth of concentration. And they say it's not until you can really do the difficult person and do them for about 20 minutes to really, you know, at a minimum. Then when you get it to where you can do all four of those stages for, you know, say 20 minutes, then that's, you know, from various, you know, commentarial from different monks and different teachers and stuff, it's like that would be like considered a jhana, metta jhana. You've entered into, and so a really deep state of concentration when you can do it at that level. And at that point in the meditation, you just keep doing it. You just really develop it and you just really kind of saturate yourself in that sort of that feeling and learning how to do it in different situations. Like it might be very easy to be able to generate that thought while you're completely alone, seclusion in the forest or in your meditation space. But in other situations, being at a group meditation in the city or something like that, it might be more difficult. So it's just learning to be able to do it in different situations, you know, be able to do it when you're hungry versus doing it when you're tired, and just, you know, just learning to strengthen it to be able to do it, you know, all the time. And then once you've done that, then you start turning it towards the immeasurable. There's actually nine different classifications beyond that, and that would be like, you know, all beings to the north, you know, all beings to the south, or, you know, all beings everywhere. And it's you know, from what I've heard is that, you know, it's like not until you've really developed it to a state where it is a strong concentration, you're able to do it for a long period of time, that you should really start sending it. And it's at that point when it is a concentration, then you do start sending it to other beings. And if you do that before then, if you're actually sort of like contemplating, like sitting here, and this is the way I've always done it in the past, is like if I was doing, you know, like a benefactor or a friend or something like that, I would actually have the sense that I was sending loving kindness, and I had, you know, sort of some really powerful experiences in doing that. But there's nothing wrong with that. If you're doing that as a particular type of meditation, you are developing some concentration. You are developing mindfulness and an interest and a joy. So I don't think it's necessarily bad to actually be sending it. But to be able to develop it as a concentration, to be able to get to, I wouldn't say you have that as a goal to be able to say to get into jhana, but to, if you really want to develop it to where it is going to be of maximum sort of potential, or to really be able to help you to break through the barriers, is what they call it, breaking the barriers, to be able to, you know, have it so it has enough power that you can actually, you know, break through greed, hatred, and delusion, that you need to, if you're doing like a formal meditation, like say the 3-month retreat, or if you ever get the opportunity to be on retreat on your own and you're working with this, you keep that, you know, not to yourself, but you're not sending it out. Because what happens is you're developing a little bit from the concentration you do have, but then you're letting it go. You're sort of, it's like not necessarily leaking it out, but you're actually sending it out. So you're not really ever developing the potential, the power, and that say power that comes from that will actually help you, potentially can help you to even go further in the meditation. At least that's what the commentaries that I've been reading recently on this sort of point to. If you're wanting to develop it as a deep concentration practice, just to see it as, like I kept referring to, as feeling loving kindness towards these other beings, and then later. So it's not a contradictory. That's even in the Visuddhimagga. It's like it's not a contradictory to say this. May all beings, sending loving kindness, expanding it, radiating it. That is the goal. That is the potential. So I'll leave this contemplation. If I've said anything that's helpful and useful, please take it. If it's not, you can set it aside.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.